ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, September 6th, 2019. For some reason, I don't want summer to be over, so I keep thinking I'm August, but no, I'm in September. And to talk about the rise of Bermuda in CONCACAF and the Nation League, joining us today, Alex Fidrishevsky, I hope I got that right. Alex Fidrishevsky of Corner Kicks USA joins us to talk about Bermuda. How you doing, Alex, today?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here in the Steel City of Pittsburgh, and I'm just happy that you guys have reached out to me, and I'm honored to be on your program.
We have a guy from Pittsburgh talking about Bermuda on a show based in Canada. This is very modern, very 2019, Alex. Let's just start with the basics. A lot of people were really surprised when Bermuda qualified for the Gold Cup. From your perspective as someone who spent a lot of time there when you were younger, what has the key been to them getting back to the point that they could qualify to a Gold Cup?
I think when you look at Bermuda, it's a small island nation, obviously. It's a population of just about 70,000 people. So the talent pool, it's just going to be based, smaller based off of numbers alone. And then you throw in the fact that they have to compete with cricket. The biggest holiday of the year on the island is this event called Cup Match. I'm not sure if any of you, I'm sure some of your, some of your listeners might be familiar with it. It's a large cricket match that the island basically shuts down for a week and everybody drinks rum swizzles. So they have to compete with cricket. But there's been a bit of a footballing history on the island. In the late 60s, there was a player, obviously at 31, far too young to have seen him myself, Clyde Best, who played for West Ham United, and then Randolph Horton played for the New York Cosmos before that Brazilian dude was there. He did okay, the Brazilian guy, but Horton was the leading scorer for the first season of the Cosmos with 16 goals. But what has seen them really come back to competitiveness now? They made a good run in the early 90s. They almost made it to USA 1994. What's really seen them push forward is that group from the 90s, Sean Goeder, Kyle Lightbourne, the Bascom brothers, John Barry Newsom was one who came on a little later on. They've gotten involved in the game at the coaching level, at the administrative level on the island, and their expertise and their professional experiences, specifically for, I think, Goeder and Lightbourne, having done it abroad, and Goeder obviously at a very high level with Manchester City, given it was during one of their kind of the dark ages for them, but he was really a big star for them. They've come back to the island and they've been able to impart their experience, their knowledge, their wisdom onto this current crop, this Naki Wells, Reggie Lamb, who a lot of the Toronto folks will remember from his short spell with TFC. They've been able to utilize their contacts and their network and put their experience to work to help these guys realize that there is a way to the next level and that there's a step off the island that they can take if they follow a similar path.
Yeah, as a City fan, Sean Goeder is a name that a lot of the longtime City fans will hold up very high. So obviously a huge guy there. And if you don't know about him, newer fans, take a quick look. But speaking of England and speaking of sort of that part of the world, is a big part of what Bermuda going to do in the near future is to look for folks that have heritage with them, kind of like Jamaica has done, to try and take advantage of expats as well to strengthen the base that's there.
I think you have to imagine that's going to be a part of their long-term plan. Obviously, again, with Lightbourne and Goeder having some bite over there, they're going to have their ear to the ear to the rail to see who's available. But it really seems that the biggest part of their development is coming off of the island. And funny you mentioned about kind of this dual national situation. They actually stand right now to potentially lose their best prospect to England. A young goalkeeper, 20-year-old Nathan Trott, has been called in to several of the England youth setups. Now, he started out with the Bermuda, the 15s and 17s, but now he's getting time with the England setup. So they may actually kind of go the other way on that one, where they're going to lose their best player off the island. It's certainly possible. Now, with the depth that England has, you'll see in the future, but the fact that a young Bermudian who has that eligibility is getting called into the England squad, I don't want to say it doesn't bode well for them, but it doesn't bode well for them when you're an island of 60,000 people.
Speaking of an island of 60,000 people, I have been reading a bit, and of course, with the rise of Iceland in international football over the last few years, it does give ideas to other countries with limited resources when it comes to the world of football. One way to take advantage of their limited resources for Bermuda is the use of their small land territory to get the players together once a week, training from a young age all the way to the first team. Young players under 21 making their debut with the first team way before the under 21 age. How has the characteristic of Bermuda, the size and the proximity of the players, maybe helped the development of Bermudan football?
Well, they have a bit of a national training center outside, just north of Hamilton. There's a very, very nice ground that has been constructed. It's been there for, I guess, about 20 years now. They have a national stadium that half of it is kind of renovated and has a box and all the FIFA needs. And then there's a bunch of training fields around it, so it gives them the opportunity to get players, at least the ones on the island. Right now there's about 15 of them, the real core group. They're all kind of spread out, whether it's in England or Zaco Lewis is in the United States, he's in the USL, and a couple of guys who've, you know, spread out into to some of the other European nations. But they have the opportunity to bring players together. And they also have, because of these, and I know I've been harping a bit here on these relationships, they've been able to utilize these contacts where clubs in England are now seeing that, hey, there's something here. There's something special on this island. Maybe not 20 Premier League players. Like, I think everybody looks at it as like, well, that's the golden standard. Well, I think it's a little different for Bermuda, but there are some clubs now that are starting to take more serious looks at what's going on in Bermuda. And one of those clubs in particular is Watford. They have a camp that is set up. It's coming up in October. It's going to run the same time as another major camp that is the EFL is involved in, but it's specifically for Watford. And their focus is 10 to 15-year-olds in Bermuda. They've recently signed a 19-year-old. His name is Kane Critchlow. He's an attacking midfielder, and he's the kind of guy who is probably going to be a mainstay in the future for Bermuda. But Watford has seen this and said, well, okay, we want to be the first ones here, and we're going to try to get in on the ground floor. So not only do they have the opportunity on the island, because it's so small, it's only 23 square miles. It's the same size as the town that I grew up in New Jersey, which is mind-blowing to me, because I've said to myself over the years, how does some place that small do what they did? And yeah, okay, when you look at the Gold Cup, they got the right draw on the way in. They got the right Central American team that they're equal to, or maybe even a little bit better than, in El Salvador, who obviously they've struggled quite a bit over the years. So they got a favorable draw, and then they played, you know, they played their heads off in the group stage and really impressed. But they've got not only the ability to bring these guys together on the island when they're kids, then they have the ability now, because of these contacts and what these teams have seen, like a Watford coming to the island, to push them abroad.
Another fascinating aspect to me, Alex, is with the Nations League, the CONCACAF Nations League, the amount of important games played by a national team is almost tenfold for some teams in the Caribbean, in CONCACAF, in Central America, having more opportunities to travel, to play games, and having an important core and an importance to a national team that before was there, but it was just once in a while and sometimes would be there. Now with the focus on result on more Caribbean nation and the pressure of result as well on more members of CONCACAF, how does Bermuda continue to get better from now, and how do they take advantage of an event, a tournament like the Nations League?
I think you just, in a way, answered the question. This is an island that rarely got together due to its isolation and in a lot of ways, the expense and the inability to bring players in, even if, you know, these guys in England, it's a very expensive flight to bring them back to Bermuda, no matter where they're from. Even a guy, you know, like Zaco Lewis coming back from the United States, you'd look at the mileage and say, well, from the Carolinas to Bermuda is only 600 miles. Well, when there's only a few airports you can fly from, and Bermuda is, let's face it, it's a very exclusive destination, whether you live there or not. It's one of the most expensive places on earth. They didn't play that often. There were times where they would go entire calendar years without playing a competitive national team fixture. Now, and I think what CONCACAF may have realized, obviously there's a bit of a financial incentive to running a tournament like this, but it helps the Caribbean nation specifically because it gives them more match time with like competition, where I think it was harder for them to organize friendlies. Now that there's a little bit more involved from the federation itself, they might be able to really expand their game, not just them, but all of those smaller islands, even some of the bigger ones, you know, Jamaica or Trinidad. They didn't get as much match time as they really probably needed, whereas now they'll have that ability to bring these guys in, or where even a club situation where if Bermuda was going to play a friendly set against the Cayman Islands, say two games in 4 days, do you really think that Naki Wells Club was going to be big on saying, oh yeah, you know, you're one of our best players, we're in the championship, yeah, go home and play the Cayman Islands in two meaningless friendlies, you know, whereas now you're into something where there's a lot more on the line, there's places in the Gold Cup and this and that, where when the call comes, you know, everyone, player, club, agent, country, everyone is going to sit there and go, okay, there is definitely, you know, there's something here and there's a reason to go back. And, you know, the club will probably sit there and go, well, still not a big fan of it, but, you know, we can't really stop you at this point. But I think it will benefit them because they'll just get more time together. It'll get the younger players integrated into their system, and that goes for all the countries in, you know, in these islands. You know, I think it's different when you look at United States, Mexico, Canada. They're trying to hit out at a different level now, Costa Rica. But for the smaller nations, it allows them to really see how things go. And now, and for what it's worth, now that Bermuda lost, things aren't over here. You know, yes, if they could clip 3 points off of Panama and then Mexico really takes it to Panama, there's always the possibility they could automatically qualify for the 2021 Gold Cup. But having lost the first game, it's not necessarily the end of the world for them because, you know, they could drop out of this Group A, this Nations League A, but there's still the playoff process to qualify. And in pots B and C, leagues B and C, there are a bunch of teams who they could cause problems for and are honestly probably a little bit better than. So there's a silver lining, and yeah, you know, the Mexico games could get a little ugly, but their journey for the Gold Cup and then eventually beyond, I think it's just begun with where they're at in the last 12 months. And I think with what you'll see where they're trying to push these younger players, you know, out of a league which their domestic league is an amateur league. They play, I think it's 18 matches a year. I've been to Pembroke Hamilton Club PHC Zebras match before when I was on the island, and you know, it's about what you would expect for an amateur league on a small island of 60,000 people. But if there's some gems there, they can use these other matches as a chance to get them into the national team setup, like you were saying, 17, 18, 19 years old, and get them a little bit of exposure to what needs to be done to get to that next level.
Which is actually where I was going to go next. I look at the country I'm in, and a few years ago, what we decided to do here to improve the national team was to really focus on the club side and to get the club side more professionalized. Is there any suggestion that that might happen in both Bermuda and maybe even beyond into some kind of pan-Caribbean situation?
You know, nothing that I've ever heard or seen leads me to believe that that's something that's going to be in the offing anytime soon. I think it is it's a very good idea, and there's lots of money in Bermuda, lots of international corporations based in Bermuda, so there's this kind of there could always be this buzz financially that if you could hook in with your Bacardis and all of these groups that are involved on the island, you know, even former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has, I believe, still a property on the island. These types of people, they're around the island, but is there going to be that type of massive investment in the sport? I'm not so sure that you'll see it at the domestic league level or even on a Caribbean league level. It sounds like a great idea if they could figure a way to have, you know, maybe aside from each, you know, as many of the nations as they can or two or some type of system. It in theory sounds good, but who governs it? How does that work? And then there's passports in all those countries that could get a little dicey. But as far as Bermuda goes, I don't think so. And I think for them, their big thing is going to be having these types of showcase camps for their youth and their players to be able to come into setups like the national team at younger ages and with the veterans that have gone through and that have now laid the groundwork. I think more importantly for them going forward, the expectation will be then now not only have Goeder and the Bascoms and Lightbourne and these guys done this, there's going to be the next cycle that comes through when Naki Wells, Reggie Lamb, guys like that, Dante Leverock, are no longer playing, that they're going to come back to the island and that they're going to step in and be the next crop of kind of, you know, coaches and trainers that help, you know, continue to help push them along. And I think there's one thing that we've seen on Bermuda over its history, they can produce attackers. That going back to, you know, again, to the days of Best and all the way through, they've always had guys who can put the ball in the back of the net. You know, Goeder had his Lightbourne, and now, you know, Wells, and possibly he's bounced around to a lot of clubs in non-league football before he latched on. Now was Jonte Smith. He could be the Lightbourne to Wells as a Goeder-type situation. So they've got depth up front, even guys, some guys who are playing in the National League now. In England, or as I had mentioned, Lewis, there's players who can go forward. Their real problem is developing players in the middle of the park and in the back. And those aren't necessarily the most glamorous positions, defensive midfield, center back, outside back. But maybe the hope for them could be that when this next crop comes through, a player like a Reggie Lamb or a Dante Leverock, who's center back, and their captain plays for Sligo in Ireland, that when he comes back to the island, they can lay the groundwork for those other positions to say, hey, these aren't necessarily the glitzy positions, but we need to develop you to get to the level that these other guys, these attackers, are at. And if they could find a way to put that circle together where they can be strong at all of these positions, it's going to be very difficult because it is a small island. And as I said, they have to fight cricket and just the workforce in general, because Bermuda is not the cheapest place to go or live. You know, if they can figure out a way to close that circle and start sending players, and it doesn't have to be to the highest levels. I think when we look at the United States, as I say, Canada, we're trying to say the Premier League, the Bundesliga, all these top leagues in Europe are the goal. Now, for an island like Bermuda or some of these other Caribbean islands, it might be if they could get three or four or five guys into League One or League Two and a couple others into the conference, maybe a few throughout the USL, that takes them from playing in their amateur, slightly unorganized domestic leagues, and now putting them into, I mean, I'm standing, I could throw a baseball and hit the Riverhound Stadium where I'm standing right now, you know, which is where I am in Pittsburgh, and I'll be down here tomorrow night. If they could put a player there, they're training right now. And on the island of Bermuda, they're the club team probably isn't training at, you know, 11:51 a.m. So if they could do that, that not just goes for them, that goes for all these Caribbean islands. If they could start to find ways to do that, that's where they can benefit.
You can follow Alex on Twitter at FYD Sports. Alex, thank you very much for your time today. Alex Fiduchevsky, you can listen to him on Corner Kicks USA. And thank you for your time today. We hope that you have a great weekend and a great international break for the rest of the next 10 days.
Thank you guys as well. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
We'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins. As always, thanks again to Alex Fidrishevsky for his time today. Nations League, Dwayne. We'll continue to talk about the Nations League for a second. Interesting thing happened over the last 2 days. Belize trying to get to French Guiana to play their first ever League C CONCACAF Nations League game. And they didn't make it. They didn't make it to French Guiana. They forfeited the game. And Guyana gets the 3 points. And they get the 3-0 win for Belize. But, you know, well, the win is for French Guiana against Belize. But there's more to the story. Can you give us a bit more facts and maybe the timeline of events?
All right. So what happened is the Belize, which if anyone's ever been to Belize, and I've been fortunate enough to be there, will know that it is not the wealthiest country. It is likely the least developed of the Central American countries in many, many ways. So this is the caveat to this, and they're flying into another part of the world, which is not particularly developed either. They don't have the same tourist infrastructures. They don't have the same airport. So I think that's an important sort of underlie for all of this sort of story. So Belize arranges a charter airline to fly them to French Guiana. And the reason they need a charter is because, well, go to Travelocity and type in Belize City to Cayenne, French Guiana, and you're going to get a 404 error is what you're going to get there. There's no directs. There's no way to do it really simply. In fact, I drove out, and the only way I could figure out to get there would be to fly and sit down for this one. And could you imagine this flight if you don't like flying on airlines? You would have to fly from Belize City to Miami, which is the gateway to Central America, Miami's airport, as most people know. Now, Miami does not have a direct flight, at least not one that I could find, to Martinique, which is where you need to get to next. So you would then need to fly to somewhere that could fly to Martinique. Martinique is a French territory, so what you're going to need is Air France. The best hub to get Air France consistently in this part of the world is where you are, Kevin, Montreal. Makes sense. But to get to Montreal from Miami,
you gotta go to Toronto.
So now you're flying to Toronto. Then you're gonna wait in Toronto. You're gonna fly to Montreal. Then you're gonna fly to Montreal to Martinique, and then you're gonna fly to Martinique to French Guiana. Not the most round. That's like an MLS. You think the MLS PU has it bad? Like, come on.
Here's what I think, though. How about you take a boat? How about you charter a boat instead of a plane and just sail from Bermuda to French Guiana? I don't know if like. It must be possible. There's cruises in the Caribbean. If you leave a few days ahead, you can get there. You'll save a few miles.
Get them all on jet skis or something. No, to be serious.
Get a dinghy with a few, like, the reserve players can paddle a bit. You know, like, earn your keep.
Oh, dear God. It's like back in the day when they had apprentices and they had to sweep the stadium. No, look, it's a difficult place to travel to and from. It's basically what we're getting at. You kind of needed the charter. So, anyway. Again, not the richest country, but they do arrange the charter. Unfortunately, something happens to this plane that makes it – they had to ground the plane. And, you know, that's fair play. You want to be safe when you're talking about air travel. So they ground this plane. Then they go to CONCACAF. Look, we don't have another plane. Can you help us get a plane? CONCACAF arranges another charter plane, but then French Guiana says, no, we don't accept the landing certificate for this, so they won't let the plane land in French Guiana. At this point – the only option they would have is to try and land in Guyana proper or Suriname and take a bus, which I don't even know how that would work, into the other country. So like that, you're looking at this point, they just throw up their hands and write a press release and say they can't go. CONCACAF makes them forfeit the game.
And they're going to get ready now because they actually have a game Tuesday as well at home in Belize. So they had to go there, but they had to come back in time, which is maybe the reason why the boat situation was not used. I'm laughing, but it must have been an option on the table, Dwayne. And they're like, well, we have to be back for Tuesday, so maybe that won't work.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think that you probably, that'd be a day at sea at least each way, so that not ideal. It'd be like doing the old, like the 1930 World Cups again.
Jesus, it's 2019. But yeah, it's the first time it happens in the Nations League this time around, the Nations League proper. But it won't be the last time. We've talked about this last year when this tournament was announced, that this could be a possibility because of the smaller resources, the lack of resources for some countries. And so and when these countries were not asked to play multiple games a year before. Now they are asked to do so. So, yes, CONCACAF is going to help more than before, and the Federation does give some funds and some help when needed to help on the travel situation and the accommodations. But this thing is going to happen again because of certain circumstances. It's not like the Nations League in Europe, you know. From Brussels to, I don't know, let's say another example.
Paris.
Exactly.
You take the train.
Take the train. Yeah. Or worst case scenario, take the bus and you'll be there in less than a day.
You could drive there in exactly. 4 hours. But yeah. But anyway.
But that's going to be an issue for the CONCACAF Nations League. And I'm wondering in the future, what is there to do? Should you just not necessarily be lenient, but in this particular case, Belize did do what they could to try to help the situation, but also French Guiana decided to refuse the landing of that plane because of certification. So is it fair game? Is it gamesmanship, sportsmanship? What is it? That's what I'm wondering too. And what's going to happen in the future? Should CONCACAF have a protocol and maybe saying, look, if the fault is 50-50, how about you both get a point instead of 3 points for one and three goals conceded for the other?
It's a bit of a mess, yeah. You earlier said it's League C. It's actually League B. So these aren't even the smallest countries involved here. So
wait till you... That's why I thought, off the top of my head, I thought it was League C, because I figure we're going to see this problem again in League C more often than not.
Well, that was my point, that you're looking at these aren't even the smallest countries involved in this. I watched a League C match yesterday, and it was exactly what you would think it was. The stadium was spectacular, though. The stadium in the U.S. Virgin Islands, it's like in this little cove with beach all around it. It is one of the most beautiful little stadiums I've ever seen in my life. Not much of a stadium. It's more of a field surrounded by beach, but nonetheless,
field,
it's pretty
beach,
fun.
And a few like benches here and there for fans.
Yeah, no, it was spectacular. But no, there's poor. And look, there was rumors last year that there were three or four confederations that were like going, we don't really want to play these anymore, which, you know, probably speaks to a lot of different issues, but certainly resources is one of them. Now, you can argue whether they don't have the resources or whether the people that control the resources don't want to give them up.
Well,
that's a problem.
I was just going to say, Dwayne, if we just look at the past as an indication of the future, we've seen, I would say, people in decision-making position in football federations across the Caribbean nation at CONCACAF, a few examples, Chuck Blazer and others, especially others as well. We've seen that the resources are allocated at the top, but they never trickle down. And somewhere along the way, some people have a heavy things in their pockets, and the pockets have silver linings, which is...
Yeah, we don't have... So I was going to say, we don't have to say it allegedly, Chuck Blazer, anymore, because Chuck's dead, and you can't slander the dead. Chuck was corrupt, and there was a lot of people attached to him, and there was a lot of money that was floating around CONCACAF and FIFA that didn't get where it was supposed to go, and these kind of issues sort of speak to that, although this is as much about infrastructure as anything else. Look, I am so torn when it comes to this Nations League. I enjoy it when it's on, and I understand the value for it, but I also think that CONCACAF is bending over backwards and creating non-competitive FIFA World Cup qualifying to benefit people that don't necessarily even want it in some cases, and that's the problem. I mean, the players want it, and that's why I'm willing to accept it. But
the players and probably the president of those federations who have the vote in the next few years when it comes down to CONCACAF election for who's going to be president. And the legacy of a Victor Montagliani is the CONCACAF Nations League, with how it does address the situation of Caribbean countries playing more often, which could lead to better FIFA rankings, better funding, better results for players and teams across the Caribbeans and the Central America. And if this is the case, it does give a good, I would say, portfolio for your re-election program that is about to start in the next year or so.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of politics to it. But the competition, as I said last night, you know, with the exception of one game, which was a bit of a misnomer because Guatemala has been placed in Group C because of their suspension for political interference before. So this is a Group A team that is stuck in Group C and has to play its way up. They defeated Angola 10-0 last night in the last game of the night, which was good because then I could turn it off and watch Bianca qualify for the U.S. Open final instead. Yeah. So that was fun.
what a day of sports yesterday, by the way. I've watched as well. We didn't talk about this on the program. Watch Italy Armenia, with Armenia pushing Italy to the brink at the end, and then Italy scores twice and they win on the road. And no, it was a great day of soccer and a great day of sports altogether.
And it'll continue all weekend as well. And tomorrow, real quickly, while we're thinking of it, speaking of Bianca and the U.S. Open women's tennis final, if you are a voyageur in the Toronto area or coming into the Toronto area for the game with tickets, the pregame event, which is at Shoeless Joe's, where it usually is, which is at King West, beside Lamport Stadium, if you don't know, it is now going to be pushed up a little bit and will be starting at 4 p.m. in order for us to watch Bianca in the U.S. Open final. So it'll be a day of Canadian cheering on, basically. So if you're there, get out there early and cheer on She the North. So it should be a fun day there. But back to this. Yeah, look. It was an entertaining day, full of CONCACAFness. I was complaining and observing on Twitter last night about how when you watch a lot of CONCACAF, that usually when we watch CONCACAF, we're only watching it through the prism of like our partisanship. So we watch, you know, Canada get screwed over by time-wasting and diving and all that sort of stuff, and we assume that maybe it's just us. But no, when you watch it all the time, this is just ingrained in the culture. Like, there was such, like, absurd. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, oh my God, it was one of the most painful things I've ever seen watching that game. The keeper went down. They were leading 1-0 late against was it Nicaragua, I believe. Yes, and it would have been an upset. Or was it Nicaragua? Hold on.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, it was either Guatemala or Nicaragua, and I mix them up. Sorry, guys. Anyway, but this is – they're leading, and their keeper goes up for a ball that goes down on the ground, and, of course, he's, you know, mortally wounded at this point. He lies there for 6 minutes. They wave on the stretcher. He stands up. No, I'm okay. I'm okay. Then he takes his gloves off, and then they blow the spray on the glove, and then he's okay, puts the gloves back on. He stands back there and waits and waits and waits. The whistle's been blown. Finally, the referee shows him the yellow card. Then he drops to his knee and, like, rolls on the ground again.
He's like, you gave me a yellow? Fine. I'll continue to act. It was Nicaragua. Finished 1-1 in that game in Nicaragua.
Yeah, so then rather than give the second yellow, which is absolutely what he should have done, he comes over and they go through the whole process again. There ended up being 7 minutes of stoppage time and karma.
Yep.
They scored during the stoppage
time. Nicaragua scored the equalizer in that stoppage time, which is very CONCACAF, I have to say. But it goes to what I was talking about earlier this week, Dwayne. The chaos aspect, the frantic aspect of watching CONCACAF games, there's something to it. And I guess it is true for international soccer at many different levels. Speaking of international soccer, Canada is playing two very important games. One of them is tomorrow at BMO Field versus, of course, Cuba. And for that game, Dwayne, 8 starters are the same for Cuba as the Gold Cup. So it is a familiar team with 5 new U23 players joining the crop as well. Cuba usually never travels with their AA team when they travel abroad because they want to come back with their players. They don't want the players to defect all the time. Dwayne is laughing, but it's true. It's true. I've seen it with my own eyes once. I think I've said this story many times, but like a youth baseball tournament in Montreal at Unsick Park somewhere. So you have like the Cubans are in defense. The guy's in center field. He's waiting for that pop-up fly. And the ball just goes over the fence, and it's a home run. So you see the center fielder run towards the fence, jumps the fence, and then just runs for his life. Continues running. Doesn't stop running. Runs. People are like, oh no. And then you see officials and Cuban coaches start to run, jump the fence, try to catch him. The story doesn't say if the gentleman made it out or not, if they were able to catch it. I don't know. I kind of wish that he got away, because it makes for a good story. And maybe a few generations later, it's like, yep, your father made it here because he was a baseball player. And one day he had enough and he literally jumped the fence.
Please go over the fence. Please go over the fence. Please. Yes.
It's my shot. My opportunity. I'm gone. He gone. He gone.
Going, gone, gone. Anyway.
Oh, damn, he's going. No. Anyway, so that's why Cuba has a lot of times 5 to 6 U23 players traveling with a few first team players for big matches like this.
Yeah, if you're in Toronto today, typically the CSA uses the Intercontinental Hotel on Bloor. You might want to hang out there and see if any guys with, you know, sunglasses and hats pulled down walk out briskly.
If they look to the left, they look to the right, they look behind them, and they bolt and start running, yeah. That's one less player for Cuba.
There you go. Maybe I'll go hang out in Bloor Street. There's a nice little pub right there. There's a Gabby's right by it. I'll hang out there and see if I see any Cubans running. No, we shouldn't joke too much about this stuff, but it happens every time. I mean, it's
becoming
it's true, right?
It's a trope now. Like before, it was like something that happened. Then it became a trend. Now it's a trope. It's like we expect it in every sport. Like, oh, judo tournament in Montreal. The Cuban judo team comes in. There are 4 guys. When they leave, there are 3. Duh. It happens almost every single sport, every single event that Cuba puts out. So,
yeah, the last time Cuba was in Canada, they had, I think, 3 or 4 defections the night before. They didn't have a full bench. That was a World Cup qualifier in the last cycle. So, yeah, it happens. And look, the Pan Am Games in 2015 in Toronto, I think, seven or eight Cubans walked away. So, yes.
And then you see them the year after pop up in the NCAA somewhere living in the United States.
Yeah, well, Ben Rycroft actually wrote an article about one of the Cuban, I think it was a soccer player that walked away a few years ago before he went into the USA. So yeah, it happens, and it's a serious topic because obviously they're applying for status where they believe they need to. So that's something to take seriously. But at the same time, from a sporting perspective, which is what we are, it does legitimately make it easier to handicap their road games. They typically don't do very well because they don't bring their best players, and sometimes the players they bring leave before the game starts.
And just for the record, I'm pro-player in this conversation. If the player feels like he needs to leave and defect to have a better life, good on you. I'm never going to say anything to someone who feels they have to do a drastic change in their life to better the life situation. Good on you if you do that, and I would probably do the same. So I'm not judging them. I'm judging their living situation. That's where my humor comes from. It's basically sarcasm because I feel bad for them.
Yeah, no, and look, in terms of the game, to get this back into a Canadian perspective, you know, Cavallini's not on the roster. He stayed back for the birth of his child. You know, how selfish of him. No, I kid, but
it's Cuba. It's fine.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Lucas, pretty much, by the way.
Yeah, so it's pretty. Other than that, it's a pretty full strength lineup. It is not going to be a great crowd. So you know, get your jabs in, ready. Rest of Canada. No, you would not have sold the game out any more than Toronto because you wouldn't. It's Cuba. The U.S. game is close to a sellout. I'm hearing from Voyager sources. If you want to get a ticket, you can go to the Voyager's Facebook group. There's an email address. It's Jamie McLeod's email address. He will be able to still send it to you. There still is time. There will probably be tickets available at Shoeless Joe's as well. So get out there and support them if you can. It should be a nice, fun day you know, it's always kind of fun when there's less people in there in a Voyagers game because there's people from all over the country that come to these things. That's the other thing too, though, is because there's more games going to be played in Canada. There'll be less travelers. So challenges there, but Canada needs to win. That's the bottom line, and they need to win significantly. If you do believe in the point situations, then Panama got points last night, so you're going to need to match them. More to the point, you want to just make sure that you set yourself up so that you potentially could win this group. You know, I don't think Canada can win every game, beat the U.S. twice, home and away. But
just once, I'll take it. Never mind twice.
Yeah, and then it gets down to goal diff, perhaps. And if they were to split the games against the U.S. and win both Cuba games, then it's going to come down to goal differential in terms of who goes through to the next game, and that will be more points if you're going on to that final and having the opportunity to play probably you know, a Costa Rica and a Mexico as well in that semifinal. And you know, if you're going to go to the Hex, you got to be, that's what they have to do. And even if they don't go to the Hex, then they need to prove that they can perform against these teams and then just put their head down and get at it with that repechage, because it will be a grind. 16 games it will take to qualify. Jesus. Up to 16 games. If you're drawn into the 14 groups, you'll have to play 16 times to qualify compared to the Hex folks, which will play 10.
Jesus.
So there you go.
Six more games for young players to develop, I guess.
For a quarter, yeah. And then, you're going to play 14, and then the two games against the other confederation, yeah. So that's
won't be easy either. Like, you might go through all the 14 games and unscathed, and then lose in the home and away series repechage, like the play-in round.
Yeah. Noah.
I was going to say it's a tough qualification process.
Yeah, people that say it's easier. I mean, yes, it will be easier to a point. They will go longer in it, is what I will say, and I'll agree with that. That if they are involved in the repechage, they will win their group. They will. I mean, that's not the question. They're going to be playing small islands. They will win that group because they always win those groups, and then they will get into like do or die situations. And depends how the draw plays out. Like, they could end up, you know, it could end up be Canada, Panama in the round of 16, and then really it's like already. Or they could have an easier touch, and they could end up go to the final, and then you're involved and you're engaged a lot later and closer to 2022. Like, you'll be probably playing into the spring of 2022 before you're eliminated, and I guess that is something. As you say, it is something that they'll get to play more as well. But the Hex would be so much more valuable to them. I would rather finish fifth in the Hex than have my heart pulled out of me in an intercontinental final. We don't even know what confederation they're going to play yet. The FIFA hasn't yet told us when that's going to happen. Normally they have a draw for all of the World Cup qualifiers, but for some reason they're not doing that this time. So there's at some point, sometime in the future, FIFA is going to have a draw to tell us what confederations are playing which.
Yeah.
So all we know is it'll be one of Oceania,
Asia,
or South America. So basically we know which two we're cheering for and which one we definitely don't want.
So we want Asia, we want Oceania, we do not want South America.
Yeah, so basically it's New Zealand.
Australia.
Does Australia's in Asia now.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. So it could be Australia in the Asian team or another Asian team.
It could be, yeah. Typically, it's been, if you look at the history of the fifth Asian team, it has been the, it was Brunei once. It was one of the Middle Eastern countries once. So they're beatable. They don't usually win. Asia, if you look, I've talked about this a lot when we preview World Cups. We talk about World Cups. The Asian countries outside of Japan and Korea are typically terrible at the World Cup. So the fifth place Asian team would be my preference. However, I would take New Zealand, and I don't want to play Peru or Chile.
New Zealand.
That's what is probably going to be in the other one.
New Zealand with John Herdman as our head coach. Sure, that's going to be fun. I've seen this movie before. But no, that's interesting, and it's fascinating. Of course, it is. As international break continues, and we'll keep an eye on it. But, you know, Major League Soccer is Major League Soccer. They do not always take the break, Dwayne. And there's a few games this weekend. NYCFC New England tomorrow night. FC Cincinnati Toronto at 7:30 tomorrow. Orlando City LAFC. Colorado Seattle. And Portland SKC. Five games on the schedule in Major League Soccer tomorrow.
It's actually a really big day for the Eastern playoff race. If you look at Toronto, New England, Orlando's still in the mix, all playing. It could really stretch itself out, and I think we'll know a lot more about the Eastern playoff race at the end of this. Obviously, Toronto traveling down to Cincinnati, a lot of our listeners will be a bit torn between Canada and the TFC game on that night. TFC, but both of them... In both cases, they are playing easy touches, and in both cases, they need to win and win significantly. Cincinnati won of their last 24 points. This is, and they are losing goals at home. So, and they not only that, ironically, Cincinnati has lost more players to the international break than TFC as well. So,
but not the same level. But that's because also Toronto and Ali Curtis were able to convince the U.S. men's national team to forego the use of Josie and Michael and Omar.
Yes.
So that made a big difference. For me, Dwayne, example, put yourself in the shoes of a Montreal Impact fan, supporter. You're cheering for NYCFC, you're cheering for Cincinnati, and you're cheering for LAFC, which all this combined with Montreal winning against FC Cincinnati next week would make that defeat last weekend not too bad, they have an opportunity. And I could see all three teams that Montreal would love for them to win for the standing purposes, New York, Cincinnati, and Orlando FC, being able to pull off the upsets. But it's a big day for contenders for the 7th and 6th spot in the Eastern Conference, the last two spots that give you a playoff tickets for 2019.
Yeah, precisely. How much right now? Cincinnati's only won 5 games all year, and one of them was against the Impact. That's got to be a lot of Impact folks are probably looking at it and going, oh, what happened that day? But yes, it's you got to beat Cincinnati if it's in front of you right now. That's the bottom line. And from a Toronto perspective, look, if they lose to Cincinnati, I can't throw my arms up. I can't defend anything. Like, I'm not tapping out, but like, I can't defend that. If they lose to Cincinnati, like, they're, it doesn't matter what they do. They're not doing anything, really, even if they do get 7th, right? If they can't beat Cincinnati, an undermanned Cincinnati, and when they're in the, when an eliminated and undermanned Cincinnati, yeah, they got to win. That's end of story.
And if New York wins, NYCFC wins, they will take over the first spot in the Eastern Conference with this still one game in hand versus Philadelphia. NYCFC, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference right now, as you can see on your screens. But on that note, it's time to wrap up the show for today. We hope you enjoyed our little discussion about the Nations League. Thanks again to Alex Fedrushevsky for his time today. And Dwayne, I'm going to watch a lot of international football over the next few days, and we're going to come back Monday morning to talk about it.
Absolutely. We just did 50 minutes during international break, and we talked about Bermuda. You can't get that on Football Ramble, huh?
And we talked about Belize also, which is too bad, because at least in Benny, you know, if you want to fix your plane in Belize, you have to go to Benny's, your number one store.
Yes, indeed.
And on that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. Thank you to all our guests this week for their time, and especially Rob Friend as well, co-owner, co-founder of Pacific FC, which you can listen to a Rob Friend interview on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, which was released on Tuesday on our Patreon feed, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to our exclusive show, premium podcast, 4 times a month. Over the last month, we had Rob Friend, Joe Bellin, entrepreneur, former Canadian international in the youth system and behind the project of bringing a team to Saskatoon in the Canadian Premier League. And also over the last few weeks, we had David Klenican, commissioner of the Canadian Premier League, on our show. So check it out. Great show, as always. But until Monday, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.